The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Now, if anybody needs to come here tonight to have a good time, please get out!
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
This
is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder, and rock and roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride.
Lick it out. Lick it out.
Episode 100, and only one guest to have for episode 100, the man I've been chasing since I started this podcast over a year ago, the person who has been at the very top of my guest wish list since I began this show, and that's the star child, Paul Stanley from Kiss. I can hardly believe it myself, but it actually happened. I sat down for over an hour, as you're about to hear, with Paul Stanley in the dressing room in Las Vegas. Such a cool story. I always had this premonition that maybe Paul's son, daughter, whatever, would be a wrestling fan. Turns out that his son Colin is a wrestling fan. About 4 months ago, we were hooked up and suddenly started talking to each other, started texting each other, and now we're actually have become friends. And the big culmination of this text relationship was in Las Vegas at Kiss at the Hard Rock, and I got to go. We started this podcast in kind of the green room of the dressing room, and he goes, now let's go into the inner sanctum, so to speak. And we went into Paul's actual dressing room, which any Kiss fan will tell you, no one's allowed in the dressing room except for Kiss guys, Kiss members. And it was amazing. Get to see the boots were kind of sitting in the corner, and the costume was hanging in the closet, and it was just really amazing. And Paul got me a coffee and got himself a tea, and we sat down and we talked, man. And it was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, for obvious reasons, and also as an interview itself. I think you guys will enjoy it. Paul told us some things that I'd never heard before, and he's actually a really, really funny guy, and always made me laugh on stage, off stage, and now I can understand why. So really, really cool to get a chance to be with Paul, and cool for all of you that have supported this show for 100 episodes. I couldn't have done it without you guys, and also without my amazing sponsors. Big thanks to all of you for downloading and listening, and a big thanks to you guys for checking out my sponsors and supporting them, because they're the reason I get to do this for you for free for twice a week. And you know where to find them all: on podcastone.com. You click on the Keeper Podcast free banner at the top of the podcast. Then you hit the Talk Is Jericho button. You see all my Amazon links there as well. It's the easiest way to support the show, because every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada. You can get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. For instance, Paul Stanley's book, Face the Music, A Life Exposed. It's a great stocking stuffer, one of the greatest rock and roll memoirs I've ever read. Very funny, poignant. Paul holds nothing back, good, bad, indifferent. A great, great timeline and a great look into the inner workings of Paul Stanley and Kiss. Plus, you can get all the Kiss records. All the Kiss, there's a lot of Kissmas products out there as well. I saw a Kiss ugly sweater. A Kissmas ugly sweater the other day, which is great. I got to get me one of those. Plus, you can order the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? With Lights Go Out, top 20 single, burning up the charts, as well as Do You Want to Start a War, the title track. Go watch the video now on YouTube. That single is already high up as well, considering it just was released, and now we wait until January when the stations open up shop again, but this has already been projected to do better. The Lights Go Out, which is amazing. You can also get a copy of my new book and my third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. People are saying this is their favorite Chris Jericho book, and I got to agree with them. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Loved writing it, and I love hearing the reviews for all that. But listen, you can use whatever you can use the Amazon links to buy whatever you want. Christmas is coming. You still got a few days to get the gifts here by Christmas, and if you use my Amazon link, it won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra challenges. So if you happen to be doing some online holiday shopping, do it through my Amazon links. Help out the show in the process. You can knock out your whole list in one shot on Amazon. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right. The Cinderblock Party tour with Texas Hippie Coalition and Shaman's Harvest wrapped up. Had a great time with both those bands. Very, very cool guys. I think one of my favorite gigs was at the Orlando House of Blues. A huge crowd. Now, the upper deck was closed, but the bottom deck was completely packed. There was over 800 people there, which was amazing. Stage was huge. Just a great, great show. And a lot of shows were good. Dallas, Minneapolis, Des Moines. I really enjoyed the Kenosha show. Was a lot of fun. You know, even some of the smaller shows were a blast as well. I think Gainesville was an amazing show, and it was probably the smallest crowd of the tour. So we appreciate everybody who came and rocked with us, the thousands and thousands who came and saw the Cinderblock Party tour. And we're looking forward to hitting the UK and Europe in March of 2015 as the Cinderblock Party World Tour continues with the Dirty Youth. That starts March 4th in Belfast. Then we're going to Cork and Dublin, going all across the UK, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Southampton, Exeter, Brighton. Go to FozzyRock.com and check out all the information for tickets and all the information on VIP experiences. You won't be disappointed. We spend a lot of time with our VIPs. We love the Fozzy family, and we love everything that you've done for us, especially all the people who've checked out Do You Want to Start a War, the album, and all the people who still to this day request Lights Go Out, and you get people go nuts when we play it live in concert. So let's play it now on Talk is Jericho 100. This is Fozzy with Lights Go Out right here. Crank it up.
Just us colliding. When the lights go out, we own the night. happens when the lights go, lights go.
All right, so love it. Fozzy, Lights Go Out. One of my favorite songs to play live. And this is one of my favorite shows today. Talk is Jericho 100 with Paul Stanley of KISS. Let's go through some of the guests that I've had in the last year. I actually could probably go through all of them. I'll read them in chronological order. And you can check off the ones that you haven't heard and go re-listen to the ones that you enjoyed. Steve Austin kicked it off, two-parter. Then there was Edge for two parts. Eddie Trunk talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and KISS being finally inducted into it. Brett the Hitman Hart was two parts. That's when I had the really bad audio. I remember that. It was like people were like saying, like, did he call in from the moon? Did you use two tin cans and a string connecting them? And I felt bad because the audio was bad. But the interview was insanely great. Then Ted Irvin, my dad, checked in. M. Shadows from Avenged. Chavo Guerrero for two parts. That was a very emotional interview talking about Eddie and Benoit. We had Benante and Charlie Benante and Mike Portnoy coming in to talk about the Beatles. Scott Ian from Anthrax. Darren McCarty, four-time Stanley Cup winner. Natty Neidhart, she was great. Then my first paranormal show, Ghost Hunter, Jeff Belanger. Callie Humphreys, two-time Olympic gold medal bobsledder for Canada. She was voted Canada's greatest athlete recently, so congrats to her. Van Damme, Rob Van Damme, two parts. Maria Menounos, Chris Nowinski talking about concussions. I saw Chris at one of the Fozzy shows we played in Boston. He came and hung out with us, and it was good to see him again. He's done a lot of great work for concussion exploration, concussion, I don't even know what the word is I'm looking for, studying to get to the bottom of which all the horrible side effects that concussions can cause. Lita, Eli Roth was amazing. The Miz, always a blast. Howie Mandel, LeJon Witherspoon from Seven Dust. Rey Mysterio was two parts. Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. David Koechner from Anchorman. He was pretty funny. Adam Carolla. William Shatner, one of my all-time favorite guests. I still love the fact that Shatner came in the studio, 80-plus years old, and drove himself there and called me to tell me that he was going to be late. And I was actually supposed to interview Paul Stanley that day as well, but Paul canceled the day of because he was in the middle of his book tour, and I was so disappointed. I was like, oh no, Paul Stanley canceled. And then Shatner called. I'm like, don't cancel, Shatner. But he called to tell me he was going to be late. So I almost had Paul way back in episode 32, so I've been waiting a long time to get him, but we've got him today, episode 100. Santino Marella took a lot of flack. He did that interview in character. And people are like, we want to hear the real Anthony Carelli. I'm like, dudes, it's show business. Calm down. Relax. It's fun. And it was a great interview. Sebastian Bach was awesome. Cesaro was great. Michael Sweet, Striper, Phil Esposito, NHL Hall of Famer. Daniel Bryan was two episodes. That was before he went down with his injury. Zach Wilde, Rob Zombie, Bully Ray from TNA, Bubba Ray Dudley, two episodes. Bruce Kulick from KISS. He was awesome. That was right after KISS got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he kind of gave us the rundown of how basically shitty they were treated by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we'll talk more about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Friday's show with Ryback. I want to get into who got inducted this year and some of the nominees, et cetera, et cetera. AJ Styles, MVP from TNA, Phil Collin from Def Leppard, Snooki from Jersey Shore. That was a weird one. Drew McIntyre, that one was a huge rating. Drew McIntyre, right after he was fired by the WWE. Then episode 50 was Paul Heyman and Edge. That was a two-parter. Vinnie Paul from Hell Yeah. That was a good episode. I enjoyed that one. Rob Halford from Judas Priest. Christian, Eve Torres, Steel Panther, DDP, and Jake the Snake Roberts together. You won't hear that anywhere else but on Talk is Jericho. I interviewed Fozzy, my band members, when Do You Want to Start a War came out. Then we had Zack Ryder, Matthias Yaps from the Scorpions, UFO expert Peter Robbins, more supernatural stuff there, Gold Dust and Stardust. I had the Godfather of Gore, Tom Savini. Chael Sonnen was on, UFC legend, Bray Wyatt, and James Durbin from American Idol. Jimmy Norton talking about Robin Williams. Ace Frehley, another former KISS member. He was cool as well. It was right when Space Invader came out. Didn't get him in person, got him over the phone. And it was funny because apparently he just loved the podcast. And I went and saw Ace. He played the same room that we played with Fozzy and Texas Hippie Coalition in Dallas called The Trees. And I had a day off. I went and saw him the next night to see him live in concert. And his manager was like, oh my gosh, Ace loved the podcast. All he would talk about is the podcast. And then when I went and said hi to him, he's like, yeah, Ace, we did the podcast. He's like, uh-huh. Yeah, you remember the one we talked about if the moon landing was real or not? He's like, yeah. No idea what I was talking about. So either he forgot or he was just playing a part or maybe that's just something that Ace would do. I don't know. Batista, two parts. He was great talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. Batista just named the villain in the new James Bond movie. Good for Dave, man. Great guy. Now he's on top of the mountain in Hollywood, which is not easy to do. Triple H, two parts. That was huge to get Triple H on the show. Both those episodes were amazing. Then I had Bigfoot Hunter Eric Altman, the cast of Total Divas, Matt and Jeff Hardy for two parts, Kevin Smith for two parts, Hornswoggle, adult film star Asa Akira, she was amazing, John Morrison, Chris Hardwick from The Nerdist, Run DMC, Daryl, DMC Daniels, was Daryl McDaniels. He was amazing. One of my favorite episodes was DMC, talking about the early days of rap and just the way he talks, and he would just bust out into these random raps. It was very cool. Then we got Justin Roberts and The Miz were together, Corey Taylor from Slipknot, Sabu, Eli Roth and Lloyd Kaufman, Toxic Avenger creator, Lake Monster, a Bigfoot Hunter, Lauren Coleman, Dolph Ziggler was two parts with The Doc, with Chris Amon. It was good to have him on the show as well. Then I had Zoltan Bathory from Five Finger Death Punch, Paige from the WWE, two parts with Slash, Seth Rollins, mob wife, Renee Graziano, she was really cool. Then Chris Slade from AC/DC, former AC/DC drummer, who the rumor is the new AC/DC drummer as well. That was a lot of fun. And then we had Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville talking about Archie Comics, who just sent me a huge box of Archie Comics. And I've actually pitched an idea to them, which I think they're going to come back with fairly soon. We'll see what happens with that. It was Zayn and Neville, who apparently tore the house down with the last NXT special they did. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I will watch it. And I heard they did great, and I'm proud of those guys. Then Dean Ambrose for two parts, episode 98 and 99. And here we are with the Star Child, episode 100 right here on Talk is Jericho. I'm so excited. Paul is coming up next. I can call him Paul.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
In the dressing room at the Hard Rock in Paul Stanley's catacombs here, it's pretty cool that you guys are doing this residency here in Vegas, man. It seems like a natural thing, KISS in Vegas.
It's something that we wanted to do for a long time, but we really couldn't work out the business aspect and some of the practicalities. But it's terrific. I mean, it allows us to go home, but more importantly, we get to do a show that we really couldn't take on tour. This is a stage that really can't be broken down nightly.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it's more of a stadium show than an arena show. It's absolutely enormous. And
how do you mean a stadium show, just in the stuff that you have?
It's wider, it's taller, it's pretty massive. I mean, it's it's daunting to run from one side to the other. It's pretty surprising because it's basically a fairly small venue,
mm-hmm.
but it's terrific. I mean, it's kind of like doing a Broadway show. It's not unlike when I did Phantom. The idea that you go in and the show is set up and it's going to be there tomorrow, mm-hmm. and you build a certain familiarity with it. So it's terrific. It's very exciting.
Was there some bugs the first night? Like, they're usually always got to work the junk out of the system on the first night of a tour.
Well, the funny thing was, quite honestly, because of the Kiss cruise and scheduling, we didn't get a chance to run through the show.
Mm-hmm.
We literally showed up.
You came straight from Miami to here.
Yeah.
Had like a half day off and then did the show.
Yeah, and never really got to run through it. So it wasn't, it was great. I mean, it was... I know how much better it can be and how much better it'll be tonight, for example. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, everybody had a great time, but there was certainly things that were missing and needed to be improved upon. So, but look, the band's great. The songs are great. Mm-hmm. So the show was great.
Have you ever had that over the years, I'm sure, like where you went for like an effect because you had so many great effects over the years where something just totally crapped out on you?
Oh, yeah.
Spinal Tap pod closes on your arm sort of thing.
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, I don't know of any band that's been around for a long time who didn't see Spinal Tap and go, oh, my God, that's us.
Yeah.
I think Priest had the same reaction. I think every band of that era went through things like that. You look at the numbers and figure that out of all the shows you do, things are bound to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you've run down a flight of stairs and come to a brick wall, you know, when you hear everybody cheering for you and you're trying to figure out how to get to the stage, we've done that. And, going, I'm going to fly out there. And I get on that rig and it takes me like 3 feet off the ground and I'm just hanging there like, you know, like laundry. So everything happens. But that's the nature of a live show. And the more you add to it, the more there's chances of things going wrong. So, that's rock and roll.
Yeah, it's part of a live show, right?
Absolutely. You know, you'll always notice things much more than the audience. And if you don't respond to the problems, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people that nobody's going to hear bum notes unless you react to the bum notes.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody plays something wrong and you look over to them, which I have a tendency to do, but if you don't do that, nobody really, you know, it passes in a flash.
Well, like you said, that's the part of the live element. If you want it to be perfect, listen to the record. But when it's live, the show must go on. And no one knows it's a mistake unless you let them know.
Sure.
It's a mistake, you know?
Sure. So, that being said, we do try to perfect a show and give something very similar every night.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody doesn't come to 20 shows. The diehards are an amazing group of people, but we have to take into account that most of the people who come to see us once or twice a tour.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to do is give people consistency. And if something worked one night, you want to do it the next night.
Mm-hmm.
That was frowned upon for a long time, but honestly, I went to see the Eagles twice on this past tour, and then my son went to see them and some other people, and I said, you know, it's scripted, verbatim.
Hmm.
Don says the same thing to Glenn, and Glenn says the same thing to Joe, but it works. And if you have something that works, I don't see it as a detriment that you're doing the same thing. I mean, why subject an audience to an experiment?
Mm-hmm.
If you just come in and say, hey, this is all going to be spontaneous, then you're running a very good risk of sucking. You know, I mean, just as, you know, there's a chance it'll be great and there's a chance it won't be. And if people are only going to see you that one night, I think you owe it to them to try to give them what you know by percentages and by experience. Mm-hmm. It's going to work,
especially when you put together a set list, because it's like there's a real ebb and flow to putting together a good set list. And I found with our band, when I get a good one, some bands change the set every night, which is cool, but I like having that like you said, okay, this is going to be here, and then we're going to do this part here, and then it's going to take the audience to a different place here.
Yeah, I think that a great show is built on dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a matter of, oh, we're going to play these songs. It's what order you're going to play them in.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to introduce yourselves to the audience in terms of the identity of your first song? I think your first song should really encapsulate what you're doing and kind of be your calling card and set the tone. So we kind of have, I don't want to say a formula, but we certainly have a visual in our mind of the pacing of a show, how it begins, how it goes down, how it builds again. Mm-hmm. And that you can change a song or two out, but changing what you start with and what you end with, I don't understand that, because mm-hmm. I don't think it works. You know, I hate going back to the idea of Broadway and Broadway theater, but there's structure to that, and there's a little room for change. Certainly in the band, there's much more room to do things differently. But there's a basic framework that works. And when you have quite a bit of technology involved, you can't throw these guys a curve mm-hmm. when they've got lasers and bombs and lights and everything's computerized. Because
everything's computerized to each song.
Absolutely. So all of a sudden, I'm going to go to the mic and throw them a warbler and do something that isn't part of the show. It's not going to benefit most of the people. So mm-hmm. most of the time, you know, we stick to a set, and we may alter it a little, but we usually tell the guys ahead of time, except when we're doing something like the Kiss Cruise. And that a few days ago, the second show, we just kept throwing stuff out there, and it was awesome.
Were you just calling those songs on the fly? Because I went and looked at the set, and it was a lot of songs you haven't played for a while.
The second show, I mean, literally, I would lean over and go, you know, how about, let's do You Love Me? How about doing this? And none of those songs were rehearsed, but, you know, it's our DNA, so.
You know them so well after all these years.
Yeah.
How about terrific. When you do a song like The Oath? Like, it makes me laugh that you do The Oath, and people just freak out and go nuts over it. And, you know, 30 years ago, The Oath couldn't get arrested.
Well, it still can't get arrested, honestly. You know, the Kiss Cruise is an anomaly of sorts. It's unique because many of those people are such diehard fans. Mm-hmm. And I would say those are the people who bought The Elder, and those are the only people who bought The Elder. So, it's interesting because, you know, if we played that song tonight, for example, I think it would go down like the Titanic. I mean, and for the few people that it would please, there would be so many people that would just be scratching their heads. You know, for us, you know, we have an enviable problem in that we have so many songs that are classics, mm-hmm. and whatever you put in the show means you have to take something else out. So in our case, to put a song like The Oath in means that what do we take out? You know, what can we lose? Shout It Out Loud?
Yeah.
Love Gun? Black Diamond? You know, so that's a very special, you know, crowd that we were playing for. I still scratch my head. You know, we do that song and we do it lovingly and appreciatively of the audience. But, you know, it's an odd one.
Well, I mean, it is an odd one, but like you said, you have the benefit of having these diehard fans. Like, some of those people would probably say, well, why don't you play The Elder in its entirety? You know, and that's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that, why don't you play She's So European? Or, you know, I go, why? You know, but I get it. I get it. And we try to take into account who we're playing for, and certainly on the cruise, there's a lot more leeway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're playing here, I have to assume that there are people here who may never have seen us.
Mm-hmm.
There are diehards. There are people who see us with some regularity. And there's other people who are going, hey, I'm in Vegas and that band Kiss that I've never seen is playing. So, you know, we have to fill a role for all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it means compromising one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. But like you said, you have to give. I've always found, you know, it's like McCartney was like that. He still is. You give you a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. You go see a McCartney show. He'll play 30 of the biggest Beatles Wings hits, and then he'll throw in like a 1985 or some really strange tune like that.
And I'm sure he's doing that for himself. But, you know, I'm of the mindset that if you watch a DVD of the Stones
mm-hmm.
or McCartney or any big you know band with a legacy, turn the sound off and I'll be able to show you every song that isn't, you know, a popular one because everybody sits down. So, you know, if I go see the Stones, I want to hear Brown Sugar. You know, I want to hear Honky Tonk Woman. I went to a Stone show where it was a night of obscurities. That was the whole thing. They were going to play songs they don't usually play. Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as they started playing them, I went, I know why you don't play them, because they're not very good.
Yeah.
You know, cream rises to the top, and songs become classics because they're worthy of being that.
Mm-hmm.
So if a song is obscure, it's not because it's a brilliant song. It's because people don't get it.
Right. Is it fun for you to play some of those songs sometimes? I mean, I'm sure you have the enviable problem, like you said, of, you know, playing Rock and Roll Night every single show or Detroit Rock City. Do you have fun playing a, you know, an Oath once in a while? Or I see you're playing Tears Are Falling now. You kind of busted that one back out again.
Yeah, Tears Are Falling. You know, we wanted to diversify a bit and cover a little bit more territory.
Mm-hmm.
And Tears Are Falling is one of those songs that we haven't played in a long time. So it's nice. It's nice to have a catalog to draw from. And, you know, it's an interesting position to be in where we've thought in the past, okay, what do we end the show with? Well, where do you go from Rock and Roll All Night? I mean, it's pretty much the song that's ended the show for 40 years. And I don't know any other song to end the show with. I mean, that song kind
of... Nothing can follow it.
No, well, it just sums up everything we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the touchstone and the milestone of everything we've done. So the idea of going out there and playing that and following it, what are we going to follow it with?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the song that kind of wraps things up and says, you know, you have experienced KISS, and
yeah.
And this is the summation of it all.
Well, you know, and just go back a bit. You mentioned the Stones and the Beatles, and I actually am a huge Beatles fanatic and have been since I was 8 years old. For whatever reason, they appealed to me. That was like 1978. My best friend was a huge KISS fan, and I was like, dude, forget about KISS, it's the Beatles. And he was like, forget about the Beatles, it's KISS. And then, of course, as I grew older, I realized that KISS and you are huge Beatles fans, especially yourself. And you can see that even in the way that KISS is four distinct faces, much the same way that the Beatles were four distinct faces. How much of a Beatles fan are you? And was that your idea when you first started? We want to be like another Beatles type vibe?
Well, interestingly... you know, the Beatles really were the face of the British invasion, you know, and nobody did what they did better than they did. They took elements of Elvis Presley, but they also took harmonies of the Everly Brothers and Little Richard, and they happened to be brilliant, brilliant songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
So it was undeniable. There was an excitement and something about them that went far beyond the Stones. You know, I'm a big Stones fan, but what the Beatles were was so much more. And again, you had a band where you could love the band and love individuals within it, you know, have your favorite. So I can't say that it's by chance that we didn't pattern ourselves, but we were certainly inspired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that what you look up to inevitably impacts what you do. So we're much closer to the Beatles than to a lot of other bands because the Beatles really understood classic songwriting. And for most people who it may be beyond, the Brill Building in New York was where all the great songwriters were, Carole King, Jerry Goffin, Neil Sedaka, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil. Everybody, all the great songs were written by these people.
It was actually in a building where they would go and write songs every day. Yeah.
Literally, they had cubicles, and they'd be competing against each other for the next Animal single, the next Righteous Brothers single, Paul Revere and the Raiders. So I'm really of that school of writing classic songs with an intro, a verse, a pre-chorus.
A lot of harmonies.
Yeah, and a hook. And the reason you call it a hook is because it's supposed to grab you.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been somebody who was into songs that just meander.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's much more skill in cutting away that stuff and coming up with, you know, a very concise arrangement. So the Beatles were masters of that. And so, yeah, I was much, much more taken with them than with the Stones. Because when I was growing up, it was, are you a Beatles or a Stones?
Still is. I asked you that question.
Yeah, and I love the Stones. But honestly, I think the Beatles could have written Jumpin' Jack Flash, but the Stones sure as hell couldn't write some, you know.
I Am the Walrus.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you look at it, when you think of an album like...
Stones or Beatles?
Stones.
What song?
2,000 Light Years from Home. And
that was Satanic Majesty's
not
Request? Beggar's Banquet?
Yeah, Satanic Majesty's
Request, yeah.
So, I mean, that was clearly, let's try to do the Beatles.
Absolutely.
Let's try to do Sergeant Pepper. Yeah. So you never had the Beatles going, let's try to do, you know, Satanic Majesty's, let's do Exile on Main Street. Mm-hmm. Like it or not, the Beatles were the ones that everybody was following. So, you know, yes, I was much more a Beatle fan and they had much more impact on me.
And all of society was following what the Beatles were doing, too, from their fashions, from their hair. I mean, you look back, it's like, okay, the Beatles go to India to start doing some, you know, meditating, and suddenly that becomes the thing, whatever they were doing.
I always say, rock bands make music, phenomenons impact society.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles were, impacting society. They impacted fashion. They impacted politics, lifestyle, religion, all kinds of things. So that goes far beyond being a band. And I think that many of their contemporaries may have been great bands, but that's exactly what they were.
Mm-hmm. Just a band. Yeah. What's your favorite Beatles record?
We were talking about that a couple of days ago. And, you know, all the early stuff is phenomenal, but there's something eloquent and in its simplicity on Rubber Soul.
Wow.
I think Rubber Soul is brilliant because the songwriting just stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you hear Norwegian Wood or In My Life, those are just brilliant, eloquent songs.
Yeah, I'm more of a White Album guy, and only because just the diversity on it. But, I mean, you can't go wrong with anything from that time period, Rubber Soul, Revolver on to...
Well, for me, the problem with some of the later stuff, like the White Album, was what I clearly saw was a splintering of a band.
Mm-hmm.
And it became real clear to me that they were losing their...
chemistry?
Yeah, and there was clearly a lack of interest in what each other were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like tolerating each other, and I saw that. And Abbey Road, the same thing. But more so, the White Album just kind of threw me. It just seemed like a hodgepodge of a bunch of guys. And look, on a much smaller scale, I've experienced that. You know, we've done albums where they were very fractured, and there was not a sense. The reality was we were doing things on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make for a cohesive album. So for me, the diversity was more based upon friction in the band as opposed to a journey they were all on together.
Well, you went through that. I mean, I mentioned becoming a Kiss fan probably in the mid-80s. I think the first thing where really Kiss... It's funny because I talk to people all the time and say my favorite era of Kiss is 80s Kiss. Because I was a teenager. I came into my own at that point in time. And I think the first thing I saw was Heaven's on Fire. You had I remember the Hands on Fire and then jumping through the hoop. Flames at the end.
Yeah.
And it was like... Paul Stanley's cool, you know, because I knew Kiss, the dichotomy of Gene and Paul, but you kept it going in the 80s. It was your thing. Like, I would go buy a record and look on the back and see what songs did Paul Stanley and Desmond Child write. Those are already my favorite songs. Those are the ones I want to hear first. So you've experienced this where you said, like you said, you're fragmented and you're having a band that's kind of more on you than anybody else.
Yeah. And, you know... Honestly, it's nothing that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I see the power in a band, and I think that a great band makes the individual stronger instead of trying to put a spotlight on yourself. If the band's good, people will find you.
Mm-hmm.
So to be in a position where I had to kind of carry the band and unfairly do it under the guise of the band when it really wasn't the band. So that wasn't fun, or compromising albums by putting on tunes that didn't really deserve to be on an album. But that was, you know, that was the way it was at that point. But the band is always best when it's operating on all cylinders. And the band today is phenomenal. I mean, it's, you know, it's lethal. I mean, it's just, we just play terrifically.
Everybody's on the same page. Everyone's got perfect chemistry.
Everybody's on the same page. And I think everybody appreciates what we have. And I think we all accept each other. Certainly Gene and I accept each other much more. We've made great lives for each other. And they're very different than what the other would want. He'd kill himself if he had my life, and I would do the same. So, but we're very appreciative of what we have, and it's terrific.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Sometimes people say, why do you write songs about women taking off their clothes? I thought about it and I thought, probably because I like looking at naked women.
In the dressing room at the Hard Rock in Paul Stanley's catacombs here, how was it? You mentioned when there's some certain songs that maybe, like, you know, obviously it has to be Gene songs, it has to be Paul songs, and you were killing it at that time. Great chemistry with Desmond Child. How was it for you, like, when Gene would submit, like, a, you know, a Burn Bitch Burn or something?
Oh, it's horrible.
You would know, really, like, come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, no, it was horrible. You know, it's horrible because we were working under this idea of quotas and entitlement. And quotas and entitlement have no place in a band. They have no place in most of life. You're not entitled to anything. Mm-hmm. You should get what you deserve. And to have songs on an album because you're there is nonsense. So it was disheartening to have to tolerate, you know, mediocrity, and to tolerate participation that wasn't heartfelt or wholehearted. So no, it wasn't fun.
Did you sing on any of those songs? Would you try and help out at all, or try and change anything? Or,
I mean, honestly, you can't help out on you know, when the ship's going down, man. You know, a cork isn't going to save it.
But I always point out too that, like, in the 80s, around that time, between I Love It Loud and all the way up to Unholy, there was never a Gene video / single for any one of your records at that point in time. So it was about 10 years.
Yeah. And what I love about the last two albums is that it's really a return to four people working together, looking each other in the eye, writing together. When we decided to do those albums, the first law was, I produce. If I can't produce, then we're not doing the albums, because I wanted to have control of a situation so we didn't have people running off and doing 10 different things when they should be doing the album. We didn't have people co-writing with people who might be, in a sense, writing the whole song and you're putting your name on it. So everybody was, you know, reacted admirably to it. And, you know, we literally wrote that stuff together in some form or fashion. And I know that initially when I said to Gene, we have to write together, you know, he was a bit reluctant. And
it's like the old days, right?
Yeah. But, you know, we kind of went astray when we decided, each of us, I want to do things my way. Well, that's great, but it may have satisfied our egos, but I don't think it necessarily turned out the best material. So on the last two albums, with Sonic Boom and with Monster, it was really great to sit around. And, you know, one of the other things that's so great is it's not loaded like it used to be. In other words, we can be in a room and work together, and our decisions aren't tied to like other issues. You know, it's funny. The analogy I just thought of is people say that one of the greatest factors in marriages breaking up is moving or redecorating. And the reason that is, isn't because, let's say, redoing your house is all that pivotal. But what it is your issues manifest themselves in things other than what they really are. In other words, you and your mate get into a fight about the color of a sofa. Well, that fight really has nothing to do with the color of the sofa. Somebody's pissed at somebody for something else that happened. So I think that for a long time that was playing into things. At this point, you know, people who work with us are amazed how great the band gets on. Mm-hmm. And we just go in. There's no ego attached to it at this point. We do what we do, and we're trying to do the best we can, and there's nothing else attached to it. Not my way, your way. But that being said, somebody has to drive the car.
Right.
So, but again, the band is so great because nobody has counterproductive ego attached to it. You know.
And plus, you know, the songs too that you're doing. We talk about Say Yeah or Modern Day Delilah or Wall of Sound, Hell Hallelujah. The great tunes, and there's a lot of great input from Gene, and there has been basically since the Revenge record. You must have been really happy when he came in back, you know, 20 years ago and said, "I got Domino and I got Unholy." Like, oh, my guy is back.
Yeah, he felt better at that point, you know, and found a persona outside of the makeup that he was comfortable with. So that's a big part of it for him, because if he's not comfortable with the way he looks, then he's really not comfortable with that point of view. So I think around Revenge, you know, and plus we brought Bob Ezrin back in, which was a huge, huge, huge help at that point. We still needed producers at that point because there was still enough ego issues between Gene and I, primarily, certainly, that we needed a deal breaker. You know, we needed somebody who would be the extra vote. Mm. And that was really the purpose. But in Bob's case, Bob is a brilliant producer. He's also a great songwriter. So it was great to have him there. And he made a huge difference in making that record.
See, all three of the records you did with Bob Ezrin had such an interesting twist to them. We talk about the Beatles and, you know, Stones, and even there's like Pink Floyd elements, and it's a very, all three of those records, very mature as far as tempo changes and adding strings and choirs. That's always kind of distance Kiss away from the normal rock as well. Like even The Elder, we talked about it. There's a lot of really deep stuff. Same with, you know, a song like I Just Wanna Fuh, and then it breaks down to like this thing with choirs and like, what is going on?
Well, you know,
it's very Beatlesque.
When things were good with Bob, whenever the chemistry is really good, it certainly pushes me. Like with I Just Wanna, that whole middle section just came to me, you know, and even Psycho Circus, although Bob wasn't involved in that song, Bob was going to do that album, and it didn't
oh,
work
really?
Out. Yeah. I mean, we really wanted Bob involved.
Would have fit, right? The return of the original Kiss.
Would have been terrific. Ezrin, but Bob couldn't be there. And I remember recording Psycho Circus, the song, and saying to him, I played it for him and said, when I was in there, I was thinking, what would Bob do? And he goes, you did it. You know, so that, you know, Bob's really good. I mean, when he's on his game, he's terrific.
Do you still think about doing another record? Because it was a long time between Psycho and Sonic
Well,
Boom.
I mean, Psycho Circus was such a nightmare to make that it kind of turned me off to the whole idea of making another album. Mm. But then at some point I thought, I don't want that to be our last album. It's not a good memory. Although Psycho Circus has turned out to be a great song.
Yeah, the song, absolutely.
You know, it's terrific.
Why do you say it was a nightmare? Just fragmented
well,
again?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, everything was wrong. And, you know, I always get into the problem that I have is that people say, you know, why don't you stop bashing Ace, or why don't you stop bashing Peter? And I go, well, if you ask the same questions, I have to give you the same answer. The answer is not going to change. Don't ask the question, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the truth is the truth. It's not a matter of wanting to bash somebody. I have to tell it the way it is. So Psycho Circus was kind of like, you know, the result of a cancer that was building. We had gotten back together. We brought those guys back, and they were just completely apologetic and remorseful and thankful to be back. And we never said they were going to be equal partners. Well, why would they be equal partners? Mm. The band existed.
You guys kept the ship rolling.
Yeah. You know, so that being said, nobody should start a collection, although they might need it now. But nobody, you know, those guys won the lottery twice. Mm-hmm. And when they came back, they were pretty broke. And we could take pretty out of that. And yet, it wasn't too long after things started to happen again that they started doing the same stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just became ugly and no fun.
And that's the worst, when it's no fun. It's supposed to be fun.
Well, it's supposed to be fun. And I found myself, you know, the farewell tour was us wanting to put Kiss out of its misery, you know. And for a while, honestly, we lost sight that we didn't have to stop. We had to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So the farewell tour was really because it was unbearable to be with those guys. Not just on a personal level, the playing was erratic is a nice way of putting it. It was not, you know, you just never knew what was going to happen day to day on stage, mm-hmm. and it was a challenge getting somebody to leave their room to come to the lobby to mm-hmm. forget about the show. So anyway, the idea of doing Psycho Circus, the idea behind doing it, was much greater than the reality of
looked
of
a lot doing. Better on paper.
Yeah, yeah, you know, hey, let's do an album together. And it's like, well, wait a minute. It, you know, you've got guys who are trying to renegotiate deals, and we're talking to lawyers more than we're talking to them. Mm-hmm. Again, this idea of I should have this many songs. And honestly, I've been writing songs for 50 years, mm-hmm. and I've gotten pretty good at what I do.
That's right. Especially for the Kiss brand.
Yeah. So it just became ugly and sad. And, you know.
Let me ask you a question from a musician standpoint. I mean, I think you always talk about Paul Stanley, the front man and the singer, and the great at both. Also a really good, great rhythm guitar player, which I think is kind of the forgotten thing that Paul Stanley does. And is it hard when you have a two-guitar band? And obviously, you played with Ace Frehley for years, and then he leaves, and then Vinnie Vincent comes in, and then Mark St. John, and then Bruce, and then Ace comes back, and then Tommy. Was it hard? Keith Richards talks about the ancient art of weaving that mm-hmm. him and Ron Wood do. They just play, I don't know, I'll play the rhythm, you play the solo, and they just lock in together. Was it hard as a musician to have to change guitar players, or is it something you just were able to just work with?
You know, without trying to make myself more important than I am. You have to play with me.
Right. Well, you're the rhythm guitar player.
Yeah. And you have to feel things the way I do. And there's a learning curve there. Mm-hmm. But having similar roots makes it easier. And, even Eric, when I first played with Eric.
With Eric Singer?
Yeah, with Eric Singer. There was a period of just learning to, for him. I mean, he watches me on stage. You know, it's we've cut tracks without me playing, and then we wind up having to recut the track because it breathes differently mm-hmm. when I play. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's not a challenge for me, but it's kind of like having to key somebody into what I do and how I play.
Right.
And, you know, I'll say, watch my right hand. Watch what I'm doing. You know, watch where my... you know, where my palm goes, watch how I'm strumming that. Mm-hmm. Because, playing the notes and the chords is easy. That's easy.
Sure.
Stuff.
It's the groove in the pocket.
The groove in the pocket.
That's what you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and I'm sure Tommy's probably your favorite guy that you've played with.
Tommy's awesome. Yeah. Man, that guy is just a killer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we played this last weekend and he was playing with Pat Travers, who's, just, you know, amazing blues player.
Yeah.
You know, blues player from the late 60s, certainly was the times we remember him most from. Tommy's just a killer, mm-hmm. you know, guys in other bands. I can remember Brad when we were out with Aerosmith just going, you know, Tommy's great.
Hmm.
And that was a long time ago. Tommy is really, you know, he's come into it.
Who is your second favorite player that's been in Kiss with you? If you had to choose, like, as far as just being a guitar duo.
Look, we couldn't be here today without Ace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ace and I started this. We laid the foundation for this. So, you know, Ace and I are at the foundation of this. Tommy is amazing and certainly a far better technician and a far better guitar player. But Ace and I were the template for this, and hate me for it, but when we were playing in the beginning, Ace was just fabulous. Had great, not only spark, but a great approach and a great way of structuring a solo.
His style is very, very trademark.
Yeah, and he and I played great together. Mm-hmm. I loved playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. We created something that was, I always, you know, what I try to do with Kiss, I want it to be the big guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's one guitar, you know. It's different voicings that create one big guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And Ace and I started it, and, you know, kudos to him. I mean, we started this.
Well, I texted you a couple of weeks ago because it's funny. It seems like, and you've been posting on Instagram too, every week over the last few months, September, October, it's like hits the anniversary of this album, anniversary of that album. It's like you guys released almost every record you've done in September or October.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
But with the internet and with Twitter and everything,
yeah.
I see things I never saw before. It's like, holy cow. You know what I mean? It's like clockwork.
Yeah. It's like every, I don't know if it's a coincidence or maybe that's just how.
I think it was two things. In the beginning, the first three albums, we were desperate to become successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it really came down to, you don't like that album? Okay, we'll run in the studio and make another album. How about this one? You like this? No, you don't like that? Go back in the studio and do another
album.
How
about this one?
But at some point, it really became the economics of it. Big bills to pay, a lot of stuff, money going out. So really, in hindsight, the recording process had to do with when we could deliver an album
mm-hmm.
and get paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. Get the money from the advance.
We need the money.
Yeah, I was going to say though, and one of the anniversaries was the 39th anniversary of Alive, and I mentioned that to you. And talking about how monumental that record is, and you were saying about how smoke in the band was, because it's such a great record. I don't know if some of it was done in the studio. Or
it was
still
well. It wasn't done in the studio. It was fixed.
Mm-hmm.
The audience was enhanced. The pyro was replaced. If you record a explosion, what it comes out sounding like is a firecracker.
Yeah.
So those were replaced with cannons, you know, because when you're at the show, that's what it sounds mm-hmm. like. What we wanted to do was create the sonic souvenir of the show. I defy anybody who's gone to a Kiss show, particularly back then, to say that's not what they remember.
Mm-hmm.
So did we enhance and manipulate things? Absolutely. First of all, you don't want to hear a mistake every time you hear a song. You don't want to hear an out-of-tune guitar. When you're at a show, you're surrounded by people. And we wanted you to hear those people around you. So, you know, what we created was what you experienced. So I have no qualms. Mm-hmm. It still holds up in my book is probably the best live album ever made.
I agree. I agree. I mean, there's a couple that are in that mode, but not as good as that.
I mean, I remember live albums, and most people won't remember. There was a time where a live album, you didn't even know it was live until a song ended and you heard some tepid applause. Yeah, we didn't want that. We wanted you to experience what you remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant creating some of it.
Was that done over one night or was it a couple shows?
It was either two or three. And I think it says in there, I mean, Detroit was a big part of it, but there was either one or two other shows. And I think they're listed on Kiss Alive.
Do you remember that night by chance after all the gigs over the years?
I do remember. I remember around the time of recording and doing some run-throughs in the sense that we would record some shows just to sit down and listen. And some of them were incredibly fast. I mean, we played really like our lives depended on it. So we had to slow down a bit. Other than that, you know, there was pressure. There was pressure to try to focus on the task of making an album and still not forget that we're playing for an audience.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned faster tempos. I noticed in the 80s, I watched a lot of, like, especially
the
Animalized show,
that's
the famous
thing.
You guys play so fast.
You know what it was? Gene really thought, and look, opinions, you know, I'm not pointing a finger, but Gene felt that playing it up tempos was more exciting and that it showed that we were really. That it wasn't lackadaisical. Well, I don't. And not contemporary as much as.
Because the faster tempos were in then?
No, it was more like we're live. You know, it's got to be upbeat. But to me, everything has to be about groove.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about pocket.
Of course.
And none of that stuff has a pocket. It's just insane, you know.
You're holding on for dear life.
Yeah, between jumping around like a jumping jack.
And your vocals were high, too. You had a high range in the
80s. That was crazy. It's crazy, you know. One thing that certainly changes with age is your voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Robert Plant sing like he did? Of course not.
Yeah, right.
Does Daltrey? Does, you know, Coverdale? It's actually biomechanics. What it comes down to is as you get older, your vocal cords stiffen.
Mm-hmm.
It takes more air to get them to vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a push and pull. The higher you go, you have to push more air. At some point, you can't, you know, there are notes that I sang that they're lost, you know. That's the reality. And I hear some of the stuff and I go, holy moly, you know, hitting E's. I mean,
yeah.
You know, just ridiculous stuff.
There's the one note that you sing in Heaven's on Fire where they do a little bit of a breakdown. Whoa, and you go like, wow, like super high.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're probably doing that every night.
Yeah, but effortlessly.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time where the singing was effortless.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, it becomes like great boxers, and I'm sure great wrestlers. You know, you reach a point where you don't punch as often, but you make sure your punch counts. Mm-hmm. You know,
pick your spots.
Yeah, you pick your spots, you know, and you know that, and athletes know that. You know, you reach a point where you go, okay, I have to be a little bit more conservative, is not the word, but judicious in what I do and when I do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I watch stuff that I did, and it's got to be the same for, you know, I can't imagine. I look upon that stuff with incredible pride, and interestingly, you know, sometimes when I see Robert Plant talking about those days in Zeppelin, it's almost kind of taking a pot shot at it or kind of dismissing what he did.
Yeah, talking
and
about it.
Yeah, and I don't understand that because is it because he can't do it anymore? None of us can do everything we did before, but the pride in having done it, you know, is most important.
Well, and another thing I love about that, you have a great sense of humor, even from the text we shoot back and forth. You had a very, it's a dry, sarcastic type of a thing. Even talking about Cirque du Soleil last night, your line made me laugh. If I see another guy on a bird with a bird head riding a unicycle, I'm going to shoot myself.
Yeah.
But your stage raps in the 80s are so funny. I mean, there's just like, I remember being 13, 14, listening to this guy talk about this, you know, this nurse with the biggest you've ever seen. Like, it's so funny, but it's not cheesy because it's you. It's like David Lee Roth. He got it over because he was committed and he was into it. Did you write this stuff down? Was
no.
it just off the top of your head?
It was all off the top of my head. And I would go, gee, that worked. And, you know, elaborate on it. You know, to this day, it's not that different than that. You know, it's I let myself go and see where it goes, you know.
You're the star child, right?
Yeah, you know, it's I'm trying to entertain. Look, I am up there to entertain myself.
Yeah.
And if I'm not enjoying it, you're not going to enjoy it. And every night I get up there, it's kind of to see, okay, what can I do? What can I do to amuse myself? What can I do to go, gee, that's either funny or that was awesome? You know, I'm a big fan of Kiss, and I'm a big fan of mine, you know? So, you know, unabashedly, I love what I do, and I know when it's great. And, and there's a real satisfaction in doing something and, you know, going, gee, that's really cool.
That worked.
That worked.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I was laughing too because everyone, it was in the 80s. Everyone took solos, drum solos, bass solos, and you went out there and did a guitar solo, which was always great too.
But I did my guitar solo. Yeah. Some people didn't get the joke. I mean, it's very funny because I remember seeing some blogs or tweets about, you know, that was horrible, and I'm like, yeah, you know, it's me kind of like taking the piss out of you know,
out of a guitar solo.
You know, look, I'm tapping with two hands.
And,
yeah. So, you know, you gotta have fun. Doesn't mean you're making fun of what you do, but everything has to have a certain amount of humor to it.
Yeah, to be entertaining. And you always had that devil may care kind of look.
Yeah,
you know, you still played the star child, even though you didn't have the makeup on.
I can, you know, unlike some of the other guys, I've always just been me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can dress it up differently. But it's me. I've never been different on stage because I don't look in the mirror and see who I'm just out there. You know, I tell people I'm not a ham. I'm the whole pig, you know.
I'm sure people have asked, they might have asked you this too, but like, what was it like the first gig without makeup? What was it like first gig when you put the makeup back on?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was incredible.
Like seeing an old friend again or.
Yeah. Yeah. It was magical. It was like, time had never passed.
Mm-hmm.
When I put the makeup on again at Gene's house, that's where we did it and tried it on and the outfits, and it was magical. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a return to something that was perfect.
Yeah.
And it was glorious. I mean, it was really a spectacular feeling.
I just started watching Fourth and Loud because, you know, obviously it's featuring you guys on. I don't know anything about football. I'm the worst sports fan ever, besides the fact that I wrestle. I'm a terrible athlete. But I liked the show and got into it because, to me, it was a real cool behind-the-scenes look at what Gene and Paul are like as businessmen, you know? And you could really see, like, you're very protective of this Kiss brand that you've built for 40 years. You've always been like that. Even to the point, okay, we're having this football team represent Kiss. They have to be winners. How did you feel about that show and buying a team? And why did you buy a team?
I thought that the show was a really good, it wasn't a depiction. It was, it captured what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I had no interest in what they call reality television because it doesn't exist. You either have reality or you have television.
Yeah.
Because if all they were doing was filming your life, most of the time it would be very boring.
Yes.
So, okay, this week you sprain your ankle and, you know, you have to go to the doctor and then you meet so-and-so. And you make up these ridiculous stories. So Fourth and Loud was really what was going on and just being filmed. And so for me, it was really, really cool and to challenge ourselves to get involved in something that really isn't our forte and not something we knew about.
Are you a football fan?
I enjoy sports, but I'm not never have been like an avid follower.
Okay.
But I have to say arena football is so interesting because arena football is the black sheep of football. Much like Kiss is the black sheep of rock and
rock
roll.
And roll,
so,
yeah.
And it's incredibly exciting, fast-paced, misunderstood. People think, you know, these guys are like, you know, third-rate.
Cast-offs or something, yeah.
And they're the upper 1% of what's available. Mm-hmm. It's only so many people can be in the NFL. So, the challenge of it was really exciting. And commitment and the hope of building something in one season that would be stellar. We delivered in terms of entertainment. Mm-hmm. The people who bought tickets, 8,000 season ticket holders, they loved it. Mm-hmm. But the team, and it wasn't the team's fault. There was a lot of things that we learned over time that needed to be changed and are being changed now. So,
what's a new world for you as the owner of a sports team?
Yeah, it's a commitment. And once again, when you don't get to hands-on do something, I'm not on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not passing the ball. I'm not running. So it's very different than being on stage with a guitar, where I am the person responsible.
Yeah, you can
decide. It's very different the more people you add into the mix. So, I thought the show was great, and I'm excited about the coming season for the team because we learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain amount of naivete on our parts, but there was a certain amount of naivete on our parts when we started the band.
Yeah.
And that's what makes for success.
Well, you had a great line too, where you said, there's no birthright to be in Kiss. There's no birthright to be, on this team. You fired one of the coaches. And obviously you've been through that with having to fire band members and stuff like that to keep the Kiss brand, the integrity of the name and the logo and what you stand for. Have you ever done anything, or has anything ever happened where you felt like you had let that brand name down or let the fans down in any way, shape, or form?
Sure. Never intentionally, but at the end of the day, can you say you always gave everything 100%? Mm-hmm. That's all you can do. Mm-hmm. Is every album we do the best when we're doing it? We think it is. That's, when you go to compete in a sport and you try to best your best and you don't, well, you gave it your best.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't always win. And I'm sure we've disappointed people at times. But again, that's also, we're entitled to that. We started this band to do what we wanted to do. And I'm thrilled that we have such a rabid following. But sometimes, we still have to follow what seems right to us. And, but there have been a few times where, afterwards,
in retrospect.
Yeah, in retrospect, things weren't quite as I hoped. But I'm only one person here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not the end all be all. Yeah. So sometimes there's been a consensus of opinions and we've gone with things that, honestly, I hate to go back to, by the farewell tour, I thought we were disappointing people.
Hmm.
People may have loved the excitement and the novelty of seeing us again, but many nights we weren't very good. And that, I'm sighing because,
Again, from a fan standpoint, like I said, I loved the Revenge record. It's my favorite Kiss album. I get in arguments with Scotty and all the time. He's like, you're crazy. Like, F you. I love it. I love that lineup. I love Bruce. I love Eric. And then when you guys went back to the reunion, I was like, okay, but you guys are just starting to cook. You had Revenge and Carnival of Souls for me as that type of fan. Mm-hmm. So I can see what you're saying because that band was a pretty kick-ass tight band, as musicians live, and then you're going to another level with the original guys, but maybe the musicianship isn't up to snuff.
You gained something and you lost something. And my hope was when we got back together with the original lineup that everybody would have learned from the past,
mm-hmm.
and we would go forward, pick up where we left off, and move forward. Instead, we were virtually prisoners to doing the same songs every tour.
Like the same 14 songs or whatever?
Yeah, not necessarily. You think I wanted to play them? The idea that I had to do interviews and, come up with some nonsense.
Gotcha.
When people would say, why are you playing basically the same set? Well, we didn't have much choice. So I thought that by the farewell tour, it was time to shoot the dog. I mean, to me, it was sad on so many fronts. And musically, I thought it comes down to this. if you read a review or if somebody says you suck and you think you're great, that's all that counts.
Mm-hmm.
But when you agree, then you've got a problem.
Yes.
When you read something that's scathing or you read something and you go, that's right on the money, that's when,
yeah,
that's when hopefully your pride kicks in and you go, they're right.
Well, as a professional, the only person that tells you if it's a good gig or a bad gig is you. You know the moment it's done. That crowd was great, or we played great, or whatever. You don't need to read a review to say, Kiss was great tonight. Jericho did a great job. I don't need that. I know inside.
Mm-hmm.
And if I loved it and someone says it wasn't great, I don't care. If I hated it and someone says it was great,
yeah,
I can't be convinced.
If I don't think it was up to snuff,
right,
and somebody says it was great, it doesn't sit anywhere near as well or give me the satisfaction,
mm-hmm,
as me going, that was great. However, when somebody says that was horrible and I have to go, you're right, that's disheartening.
Then there's a problem.
Because I take tremendous pride in what,
mm-hmm,
I do.
Mm-hmm. Every night.
Yeah.
We talked about this briefly, and there was so much, you know, controversy, and I don't even really care about that. But just the fact of, with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, when the four of you guys actually were on stage, and I'm sure you spent probably minimal time backstage, but mm-hmm, was it a cool moment to be there with the four dudes, or was it just like, let's get this on and get it over with? How did you feel? Because as a fan, once again, I was there. I was screaming at you, Paul Stanley. But just to see the four guys on stage again, it was like, that was enough for me. I wish you, mm-hmm, could have played. I wish someone would have played. But all that aside, just the four of you there, it was a nice moment.
I agree. And all I wanted it to be was a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice moment for us all to go, look what we started together.
Yeah.
But to take it anywhere beyond that,
no.
I didn't want any part of it for many, many, many reasons.
From a physical standpoint, the guys might not even be in shape to do the touring that you do because you guys are everywhere. You never stop. We talked about that earlier.
You know.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah. All I can say is if we'd put on those costumes, thank God for spandex, you know.
I knew you were thinking that.
But, you know, truthfully, it was surreal,
mm-hmm,
because, quite honestly, I don't have any real connection to those guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a page from the past, and intellectually, I could get it, but emotionally I didn't get much because there's been a lot of grief and a lot of stuff that wasn't nice.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I called Peter a week before and I said, hey, you know what? We don't agree about a lot of things and we're not going to agree about a lot of things, but let's celebrate. Hey, we've got something.
Yeah.
We've done something great together. And my attitude was, this is our moment to look at each other and go, look what we've done.
Yeah, pat each other in the back and say,
pat each other
job,
on
guys,
the back,
yeah,
and then stab each other in the back. You know,
you know, I think there's the fact that you have such a great band now and the iconic four faces of Kiss. To come back, and I'm sure people ask, well, when you had, you know, Tommy and Eric come in, did you think about giving them different characters?
Never.
I don't think I understand why you don't. Kiss is the four entities. And I texted you a couple of weeks ago at that Kiss tribute band I was at. Mm-hmm. I said, you go and see it. This is Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. And I think that's actually a pretty smart move, but you've taken a lot of flack for it.
I'll interrupt you for a second.
Okay.
You know, we've taken flack from a small group of people. Mm-hmm. Do I listen to that small group of people, or do I listen to the 600,000 who saw us on this tour that we ended? For 40
huge numbers, yeah, the Def Leppard Kiss,
yeah,
tour.
42 shows, 600,000 people.
Wow.
And do I listen to them, or do I listen to a few people? And it is a few,
mm-hmm,
vocal as they may be, but when you look at it in terms of proportionate, it's a small amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's 1,000 people or 20,000 people, it's minuscule. And look, everybody has a right to their opinion, mm-hmm, and act on it. You know, you don't want to come?
Don't.
Thanks for the time you were with us.
Yeah. Do you look back and say maybe you guys should have done that with Vinnie Vincent and Eric Carr and had them play the
everything
cat
happens.
In space?
Everything happens for a reason.
Sure.
You know, and all those hypothetical situations, it doesn't mm-hmm. enter into it. I have no idea what that would have done. It certainly didn't feel right to do then, so we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But once we put it back on, once it was back on, it was clear we would never take it off again.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly weren't going to have an Egyptian warrior, you know, or, you know, rest in peace, you know, a fox, and we weren't going to have a turtle, and we weren't going to have, you know, snail man, you know.
Eric Singer's got the big schnoz. He could have been the beak man, the bird.
Okay, I'll tell him.
I'll tell him. He'll answer for 20 minutes.
But, you know, these characters we nurtured, you know. Somebody can say, oh, you know, he's making this up and whatever. Look, as far as I'm concerned, we nurtured those images.
Mm-hmm.
We made them what they are. We kept things going when others fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. I never quit the band once. I never quit it twice. Mm-hmm. I never didn't show up. I've been there every friggin' day.
Yeah, every Kiss show ever. Yeah. You've played it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the one that I didn't play, I couldn't play, you know, but...
But someone else didn't play for you, though.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
That's right. But at some point, I'll be replaced, and I don't want the guy...
How do you mean when you say that? You say that in your book, too. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that Kiss will live on?
Totally. Absolutely.
Is this something you want to do, like make it like the authorized Kiss?
Well, it wouldn't be the authorized anything. It'll be Kiss,
mm-hmm.
you know. The people who said that's impossible are already 50% wrong, you know.
But who can replace you?
Oh, look, you know, there's great talent out there, and there are great people, and it's not a matter of mimicking me as much as bringing you, you know. There are people out there who can bring something special to the table, and, you know, they're not going to be Horseman, you know, you know. They're not going to be Flounder Boy.
So are you looking for somebody? Like, is this something that you and Gene have discussed? Like, when you're 80, you're going to be, you know, finding people to play?
Well, you know, I'm not waiting until I'm 80.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, of course. I love this band. And a lot of people love this band and love what it stands for and what it delivers and what it represents and how it inspires people. And what I say about, you know, the band is bigger than the individuals, doesn't just go for mm-hmm. those. Mm-hmm. It ain't the other guys, and I'm excluded from that. I'm proudly a part of that.
You know, I can understand that, too, because it's like, say, James Bond. We love James Bond movies. Sean Connery is the James Bond to a lot of people, or Roger Moore. But now we're 5th, 6th, 7th incarnation. The character of James lives on. The character of Batman lives on. The Star Child character can live on.
And the fact that somebody goes, oh, that's not rock and roll. Well, that may not be your idea of rock and roll. But, you know,
we've always done it your way.
We go out on tour. We have a big European tour that'll be coming up, where one night the headliner is Muse, the next night is Metallica, and the next night is us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody's going to be in that audience holding up signs, you know, what happened to so-and-so, any more than anybody goes to a Yankee game and goes, where's Babe Ruth? You know, life goes on. And, you know, we aren't your average band. Mm-hmm. We're Kiss.
Never have been, yeah.
And we don't have to fold because of the limitations of other bands.
Mm-hmm.
I have too much pride in what we do.
Now, you talked about inspired as we wind down here. Besides my own father, you're the most influential guy for me on a professional level. Told you the quotes that you said, probably even off the top of your head, years ago, decline of the Western civilization. Mm-hmm. The only people that tell you can't do something are ones that have failed. I'm not going to tell you can't do something because I did it. You can do it. I took that to heart. And when I said I wanted to be a wrestler, and when I said I wanted to be in a rock band, and people were like, oh, come on, you'll never do either one of those. I always remember in the back of my mind, Paul Stanley said this. So I always had this vision in my head, like, ah, man, maybe someday Paul will have a kid who likes wrestling, and maybe someday I'll get to meet him because of that. And lo and behold, a couple months ago, I get this text. Paul Stanley's son is a big fan of wrestling, and it's his birthday coming up, and he wants to get a video from John Cena. And suddenly, I get the video from Cena and find out that your son, Colin, is this huge fan of wrestling. and then send him the video and then get a call. And it's, hey, Chris, it's Paul Stanley. Like, for me, like, I'm glad that we had that relationship, because if I would have just met you face to face, first of all, I would have been like super fanboy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, how insane is that? That Colin is become a wrestling fan to where it led to this. It's so amazing to me. He loves wrestling.
He loves wrestling. He is so enamored and so taken with it. He, at night after when it's bedtime, he's in his room reading books on wrestling and statistics and wrestlers and who fought who. And you know, it's great. And you know, it's got to be interesting for you to see where your life has taken you. Mm-hmm. And it's just as interesting for me to see where my life has taken me and the opportunities that my success have given me, who I've met, and likewise the satisfaction that comes from empowering or inspiring other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how does it feel when if I say this to you, like, even for me walking here, a couple of people, hey, Jarek, how you doing? You know, one, Jarek. And people, it's, I never take that for granted. I never go, oh my gosh, this person's crazy. Like you can inspire this type of reaction for someone going, hey, nice to meet you. Like, how does it feel for you to know after 40 years of being this guy in the spotlight, and you're still you, you're a very laid back guy. I mean, right off the bat, I could see that from the fact that you actually called me. Who calls? Who uses the phone anymore? Everyone just texts or emails. You actually called me. Like, how do you feel when you have, did you ever sit back and go like, wow, I mean, this is pretty cool, this influence that I've had on people, being positive.
It's more rewarding than anybody could know. Mm-hmm. The idea that you can inspire other people and not, you know, it's one thing for somebody to go, oh, I play the guitar because of you. When somebody says, I became a doctor because of mm-hmm. you, I became a wrestler because of you, it's bigger. And not to take away from a musician, but the idea that you can empower, again, inspire people to follow their dream, but also let people know that it's not enough to dream. Hard work is what will get you there, but it's in your power. You know, to be at this point in my life and look at the amazing life I have, and also be able to tell other people, there's a lot of room at the top of the mountain. You can come up here. You know, the peak of the mountain isn't just for one person. There's lots and lots of land up here. Come on up. You know?
Come join me.
Yeah.
Did Colin get into wrestling because of you, or did he just find it on TV one day?
He just found it somehow.
Because he knows everything about, like, he's talking about Antonio Roca and all these guys from the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's he loves it. He loves it. And it may in some way be an outgrowth of the fact that he's superhumanly strong. This kid is, he carries my wife around. I mean, he wrestles with me. Now, when he was 7 years old, he wrestles with me to win, and he's really strong. This kid is ridiculous. So I think that also he's gotten into sports. He's really great, you know, baseball,
yeah.
And basketball. So the physicality of wrestling really appealed to him. And it's terrific, you know.
Did you ever watch wrestling when you were younger?
I did. You know, I saw Bruno Sammartino. I saw the Von Erichs. I saw the Fabulous Kangaroos. I saw the Iron Sheik, Sailor Art Thomas.
So that's some, like, late 60s guys, yeah, from New York area.
And, Killer Kowalski. I saw Saturday night when I was home, Channel 11, and watched wrestling.
It was funny. I sent Colin an outfit of mine that I wore at Madison Square Garden.
It's so awesome.
He put it on.
Oh.
He sent me the video. It was so great. It's like 3 feet too long.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, when I get home, I have to pick it up. It was made into a 5 foot wide shadow box.
Wow. You know?
I mean, it's enormous. And I designed it, and it's going up on his wall. And he's determined that his turn will come, and he will wear it.
He's going to wear it. It's from WrestleMania 20.
That's right. He's going to be there. So he's really thrilled. You know, we're going at the end of December.
Yeah.
And he's just over the moon. I mean, we actually had to make sure that our vacation that we were planning to take didn't
interrupt that.
Interrupt that. You know, my wife said to me, that's not going to happen. So he's just over the moon. And funny, you know, my three-year-old, they're all very aware of what I do.
Mm-hmm. And how is that?
It's terrific. I mean,
because my kids just kind of look at, oh, it's just dad, whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, my oldest, you know, he's grown up around this and he's a musician. If you're a good dad, that's what counts most. Mm-hmm. And the rest is just what dad does. But it's very funny because my three-year-old says, you know, I want to wear makeup because she's three. I want to be a rock star like you. So all that stuff is great. I mean, the greatest, ultimately, if your fame and your success is a vehicle to get you to a great relationship and children, I mean, to me, man, I won the lottery.
Yeah.
You know.
It's your greatest hits ever.
The greatest.
Yeah. Last question. I know you got to get ready to go. Favorite song that you still like to play live?
I love Detroit's. I mean, Detroit Rock City is just such a great song. But there are so many. I love playing Psycho Circus. I love that song, mm-hmm. you know, and we're doing Creatures now. So it's, you know, I'm really pretty fond of a lot of our stuff.
What about some of the obscure ones? Like, let's say from the 80s, if you're talking about songs from Crazy Nights or from Hot in the Shade.
Hide Your Heart. We were playing Hide mm-hmm. Your Heart on this last tour. That was fun. It was fun to play that. There's a lot of stuff in the 80s I'd rather not play. You know,
but listen to a song like King of the Mountain or Silver Spoon. Like, those are really well crafted. Silver Spoon with the gospel vocals on it.
Yeah, there are cool songs. They're kind of like little exceptions, you know,
to the rule.
Yeah, they're like little diamonds in a pile of coal.
Well, Paul, man, like I said, this is great. It's my birthday this weekend. This is the best
birthday
I can have, and getting a chance to get to sit down and getting to know you over the last few months. That's even better than just meeting you on the street somewhere or something like that. So
you're a good man, and
thank you so much. You know, and remember, anybody out there, people think it's my quote, but if you want to do something, go out there and do it.
Absolutely.
Make it happen.
Absolutely. You know? Always be the people that you have to be weary of are the ones who tell you what you can't accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you surround yourself with people who say, yes, you can.
You have made us the number one band in America. You did it, people!
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
God gave rock and roll to you!
Well, the dream has come true thanks to Paul Stanley, the only guest I could have ever asked for or wanted to be on episode 100. What a great interview. And like I said, when we were done, Paul went, you are good. And that just made me feel good to know that he thought I did a good job as the interviewer. And I felt it too. My secret to Talk is Jericho is you don't really want it to be a chronological history lesson. You just want it to be more of a conversation, more of a chat. Just talk about stuff because I know what it's like to be asked the same question. Sometimes that's fine, but it's also fun to be asked different things that make you think and are fun to talk about, let's be honest. And it was fun to talk to Paul and it was fun to get a little bit more insight by reading his book, Face the Music, A Life Exposed. If you haven't read it, you really need to check it out. It's one of the best rock and roll autobiographies, and I should know, I've written three of them. You can get them on Amazon. You can get this through my Amazon, through my Talk is Jericho links. It's a great, easy way to support the show. You can also get the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Or any one of my three books, Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, Undisputed, How to Become World Champion in 1,362 Easy Steps, or A Lion's Tale Around the World in Spandex. It's a trilogy. You can't read one without the other, and you can go buy all three of them on Amazon. Actually, you can buy whatever you want, guys. guys. This is Christmas time. You got to get gifts for everybody. You can do that through my Amazon links. You got to shop. Do it with me. You can go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of my Amazon links, Amazon UK, Amazon USA, Amazon Canada Today. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just getting your shopping done. Help me out in the process. Easiest way to support the show. And thank you so much for supporting this show. I appreciate it so much. Every person who's ever listened to even one episode of Talk is Jericho, or if you've listened to all 100, I appreciate it and I thank you for that. And I thank you for joining me here twice a week. It means a lot to me because I love doing this show. I love bringing you diversity and the versatility of the guests that I have on. And it gives me a chance to talk to my friends and make new ones like I did with Paul Stanley. Once again, thanks to Paul Stanley for being my 100th guest and for being such a positive influence in my life. I could never have done all the great things I've done without that simple quote from Paul and the way he said it. The only people that tell you can't do something are the ones that have failed. I'm not going to tell you can't do something because I've done it. You can do it. And I feel the same way. Go out there and capture your hopes and dreams, guys. Go out there and be everything you want to be and do all that you want to do. Believe in yourself and you can make it happen. And that's a message from me to you. I love you guys. Thank you so much for being with me here. And I appreciate it coming back to see me again, because that's it. Another episode, another fun-filled episode of Talk is Jericho. Until the next time, in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. And this Friday, talk about someone who's reached out and grabbed his hopes and dreams and made it come true. I got Ryback is here to see you for episode 101. All right. Remember,
we love you, people.
Well, we love you. Let me tell you something, people. You have made us feel awesome tonight.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You people are dynamite.